The Chaldean. Second volume. The Gospel of the Chaldee. Previously called the Book of the Illuminators, having the authority of the Nazarenes. Chapter 11. Jesus then went by boat, and where he landed there was a man who lived in a deserted tomb, because he was tormented by an intrusion from the kingdom of dark spirits. Attempts had been made to confine him in fetters, but because of the strength unnaturally given, he easily escaped. Day and night he would shriek among the tombs and upon the hillside, terrifying people and often injuring himself by falling. Jesus knew the nature of the tormenting thing and called upon the power within him, so it entered the body of the possessed man, wrestling with the evil thing inside him. Then the man ran screaming among a herd of swine, and too fell into a ravine, but shortly the man became calm, for the evil intruder had departed from him. The swineherds ran away to carry the tale of these events to people round about, who came to see for themselves what had happened. When they saw the madman was rational, they became afraid and asked Jesus to go away. When Jesus was preparing to depart, the man who had been cured begged to go along with him. But Jesus said, "No, you remain here and bear witness for me." The man spread the tale of what had been done for him through all the free cities, for he received much silver in the marketplaces. Coming close to another town on the seashore where a crowd was gathered to hear him, Jesus saw Matthew seated where dues were collected, and he said unto him, "Are you ready to follow me?" For he had spoken with Matthew before. Matthew replied, "I am ready, but first come and eat with me." When Jesus arrived at Matthew's house, he found other tax gatherers had assembled there, with many others who did not observe the laws of Moses which are in the holy books of the Jews. While eating, Jesus said, "No man of himself can know right from wrong. For what is right in one man's eyes may be wrong in another's, therefore strife arises among them. Only when men accept a single standard of judgment and abide by it can there be peace. When men live together without the light of the law, they are like a house built with unmortared bricks, or like men trying to tow a boat but all pulling in different directions. There are two laws, the law of men and the law of the Father who is in heaven. When I speak of the law, I do not mean the law of men. I am the light illuminating God's law so men see it more clearly, and though I fulfill the law, I do not change it. Never say this is right or that is wrong, but only this is right or wrong according to the law, and in the light of Jesus. I bring new oil for the lamp of the law, for that within it is now impure, and the light produces too much obscuring smoke. For I am the Son of Man and bear the sufferings of men, coming to fulfill their hopes even as it has been foretold. Is it not said among the Jesseneth that the Son of Man is the perfected man who will set the standard for those who wish to be true sons of God?" Later, when Jesus went outside, he found some Perushim standing apart, as was their custom, and one put the question to Jesus, "How can you claim to be a teacher, interpreting the laws of God, when you associate with tax gatherers and lawbreakers?" Jesus replied, "It is not the healthy who need the attentions of a physician, but those who are ill. It is the tree growing out of the sand which requires watering, not the one growing by the river. I come to minister to the spiritually sick, not to the righteous who have their consolation." A man in the crowd said, "This is a day of fasting, kept by all who are truly religious. Yet here are you and your disciples eating and drinking." Jesus said, "Is it usual for attendants at the bridal bower to deprive themselves of pleasure while the bridegroom is with them? Soon he will depart, and that is the time for hearts to be heavy. A heart weighed down without cause is an unnecessary burden, adding neither joy nor benefit to the lives of men. Fasting is good, but when it becomes a routine religious rite, it is no more than a purposeless vexation." A soldier in the crowd asked Jesus, "Do you uphold the teachings of John of the wilderness? For there was a man I can understand." Jesus replied, "John sent men to me inquiring whether I was the promised one or should they look for another. I said, 'Go back and inform John of all the things you have heard and seen here, and how the poor are learning about the coming of the rule of God and the disinherited told when justice will reign.' People went out into the wilderness, expecting to find a great man, but what had they in mind? a man speaking like the prophets of old, or a nobleman clad in garments of fine linen. John dressed in a manner fit for the place and purpose, and he spoke in accordance with the message he had to convey. He was the man of whom the holy books speak, a voice of one crying in the wilderness, preparing the path for one who follows. I tell you with all sincerity, no mother ever gave birth to a better man than John, yet when the rule of God comes, everyone living will have to exceed him. Ever since John declared these things, he was harried with violence, even though all the prophets before him foretold present events. He spoke with the voice of Elijah, and if any of you have the understanding, you will know what I mean. Concerning this generation, which is wrapped up within itself and blind to all going on about it, there is little to say. It is like children at play calling out to one another, "We play the pipes, but you refuse to dance, we raise a lament, but you will not mourn." Like all good men, John was misunderstood, for few knew the measure of greatness. He lived simply, neither eating nor drinking to excess. And because of his way of life, men called him crazy. The servant of man comes along and goes among the people, eating and drinking with them, and he is accused of gluttony, loose living, and drunkenness. What must a man do to prove himself in the eyes of the people? Whatever he does is wrong. One of the Perushim who was nearby said to Jesus, "We understand your meaning, but where do you stand in relation to the law? Have you come to take it away or declare it obsolete?" Jesus replied, "No one patches an old cloak with new fabric, for this shows up its age without strengthening it. Likewise, no sensible person puts new wine into old wineskins, for this causes them to split, the wine pouring out, so neither the wine nor the wineskins have any value. Is it not much wiser to put new wine into new wineskins? I have come to place something beside that which is already there, to hold a mirror to the law and to man, so both may be seen with greater clarity." A poor man standing nearby said, "What use is the wisdom of the holy books? Will it provide our bread?" Jesus replied, "What use is a lamp at night? Will its light appease hunger? Is it worthless because it cannot do so? Each thing has its appointed use. The foot should not be called upon to do the work of the arm, nor the ear the work of the eyes. A carpenter does not do the work of a potter, nor does a weaver make plows. A pupil may not be a good teacher, nor a servant a good master. Each must seek only to excel in the position he has, and not to be better than others at their own task. Whoever supports me, that person will I support, and I will strive with those who are against me. I have not come to bring peace but to put a sword into the hands of men, setting sons against their fathers and daughters against their mothers. For nothing is worthy if a man will not fight for it. Anyone following me will find enemies among his own kindred, and though he love his parents above all else, I will give him a cause which is greater. My burden is not light and must be shouldered with fortitude and courage. Those finding it too heavy must go elsewhere. The man who seeks to preserve his life through cowardice will be deprived of its benefits, and he who is prepared to make sacrifices for the cause of man will surely gain the crown of life. Whoever receives a good and just man openly, giving him his due, shall in turn be given the reward of his merit. But those who expect to receive rewards bestowable only by one greater than a prophet will be disappointed." It was after this that Jesus said to his disciples, "When the task is difficult, a man seeks consolation from his Father. A man may be lonely among many, but no one need be lonely in the spirit, for this is never shut off from communication with a source of comfort." Then Jesus prayed, "O Father above heaven and earth, your Son submits to your will. And if things declared in your name remain mysteries to the learned but are revelations to the simple-hearted, you know best, my Father. You have placed a great responsibility on your Son, but few heed him. The Father's words, spoken through the mouth of his Son, are not highly regarded." Later, at another place, Jesus said to the people gathered there, "Follow me, all those who are overburdened and weary, and I will help you. Take the yoke of my cause upon you, and learn from me, for this will ease and not add to your load. I am understanding and compassionate, not expecting anyone to bear a load too heavy for them. The heavy laden shall know the light and be moved from the darkness, but they who cast aside their burden and go astray are lost forever in darkness. Life loads each according to his capacity, and no two bear a similar burden. At this time, Jesus always kept some disciples with him when he walked about, and one Sabbath he and two of them were following a small pathway leading past uncut corn ripening in the husk. The disciples plucked a handful, for the law permitted them to do this, providing they did not enter the field or take any away, and, rubbing the ears between their fingers, ate the grains. Three Perushim were passing by, and they rebuked the disciples and said to Jesus, "Why do you allow your followers to do things not permitted on the Sabbath?" Jesus answered, "Does the deed affect the day? Have you not read that, when driven by hunger, David went into the house of God and took the sanctified loaves to eat, sharing them with his men? Though these loaves were reserved for priestly fare, did he not justify himself by saying all produced by the earth were for the use of men? Surely the Sabbath was made for the sake of man, and not man for the sake of the Sabbath. As man bows to the needs of life, so the Sabbath must bow to the needs of men." Towards evening, as they returned, Jesus saw a man working in the fields and said to him, "If your labors are dedicated to the service of God, you are blessed, but if it is otherwise, you are a lawbreaker." The disciples, hearing this, said, "Sire, is there so much difference between the things of the morning and the things of the evening?" Jesus said, "The same difference as between an empty stomach and a full one, the same thing may be forgiven one man but not another." On another Sabbath, Jesus came out of the temple to be accosted by a man with a paralyzed arm who said, "Sire, I am a mason who can no longer be useful and must humiliate myself by begging for food to feed my family. Let me become a whole man again, not for my sake but for the sake of those depending upon me." Nearby stood some self-righteous members of the congregation who watched closely to see what Jesus would do. But he, knowing their thoughts, called them over and said, "Let me know your views concerning the keeping of the Sabbath. Should good be done when it would be uncharitable to leave it undone?" They said, "We abide by the law as it is interpreted for us by those knowing better than we." Jesus became angry and was hurt in his heart, for their hard-heartedness and wrongful interpretation of the law were indications of their spiritual apathy. So he healed the man's arm. The self-righteous see no wrong in themselves, only in others. And they interpret all things to accord with their own convenience. Then the self-righteous ones left, plotting among themselves, and they decided to become supporters of Herod, who was against Jesus. They said, "Let us set a trap for this troublemaker who condemns our ways. He reproaches us for wrongdoing when we simply obey the law, and accuses us of things which he declares to be sinful but which are not more than natural weaknesses of men. He proclaims himself to be the mouthpiece of God, so let us test him and see. Let us find out whether he speaks true or false. We will send men to beat him up, and see then whether God comes to his aid. Let other men abuse him and hurl insults at him, heaping every kind of indignity upon him, treating him roughly to test his gentleness. We will heckle him and cause commotion whenever he speaks, and see whether he abides by his own teachings under provocation." They laid their plans. However, there were others who came to Jesus and asked him how they would recognize the deliverer when he appeared among them. Jesus said, "Is it not written, 'He will judge the disinherited and lowly who trust in him. He will smite the earth with the rod of his tongue and destroy wickedness. He will be girdled with integrity and belted with trustworthiness.'" Then some said, "Surely this man is God's anointed." Someone said, "Sire, how do we know the deliverer will come to us?" Jesus said, "Is it not written, 'He will come to the worthy and just, but to the people he will be like a winnowing fan, ensuring only the best are gathered in?' It is also said, 'He will bless those who follow him with wisdom and gladness. He will be sinless, gathering together a dedicated people whom he will lead in righteousness as an example to all nations. They will cast out the ungodly from their midst. Those born in the days of the deliverer will witness the things he will do for the generations which follow. Is it not also written, the words of his mouth will smite the earth forever, and, for the chosen among men, there will be a guiding light for the rest of their days. Chapter 12. Peter, who had been called Simon, owned a house beside an olive garden, and his brother, his wife, and his mother-in-law lived there with children and servants. These did not welcome Jesus, while Peter's mother-in-law kept to her bed, for she was down with fever. Jesus, finding her in this condition, sat down beside her and, taking her hand, stroked it so she soon slept. When she awoke, she got up and attended to the guests, for the fever had gone. The brother of Peter said to Jesus, "This place already supports sufficient priests and expounders of religion, and you bring others with you to swell their numbers. How will you all live?" Jesus said, "I will tell you a parable. An inconsiderate man once owned a cat, which he sometimes neglected to feed. One day, he came home with a dog found wandering and lost. The cat said to the dog, 'Now I shall surely starve, for you are much bigger than I am, and the food for you will be often forgotten, so you will devour mine.' The dog said, 'This will not be so, for when we are hungry I can bark and whine, which you cannot do. This will show the master we are hungry, and we will both be fed.'" Later, while they were dining, Jesus said, "Men say I am the scourge of the Perushim, but this is untrue, for many of these are godly men whom it would be unworthy to lash with the tongue. It is the painted Perushim, the hypocrites pretending to be what they are not, whom I criticize. There are those who carry their goodness on their shoulders for all to see, those who say, 'Tell me my duty and I will do it, show me my obligations and I will carry them out,' those who bow to the ground so their eyes may not look on passing women, those who trip over their feet with excessive humility, and those who do good out of fear. I bring their faults into the light of day, so they may benefit from their own shame." The brother of Peter said, "Sire, we are respectable people and live among our own kind, for a man who works among goats always carries some of their smell. Why do you associate with wrongdoers?" Jesus said, "I prefer the wrongdoer who is aware of his deficiencies to the good man who is overly aware of his goodness. Is the starving and desperate man who steals to feed his hungry children bad, while the overfed respectable man protected from temptation by wealth ill-earned is good? Which of the two needs compassion? Going to the temple makes no one good unless goodness is already established in their hearts. No truly good man could serve the Father devotedly for an hour and then turn his back on him for the rest of the day." Jesus went outside to where there was an open space surrounded by trees, and here a crowd started to gather around him. While he was speaking, a man pushed through in distress and, coming close to Jesus, begged him to come and save his young daughter. Jesus said, "I will go to her immediately after I leave here." Now, a leper stood apart from the crowd, and Jesus went over to him, saying, "Do you want to be made well?" The man answered, "O Sire, you could make me a new man if you would only will it to be so." Jesus touched him, and the man's affliction began to depart. Jesus said to him, "Go to a priest, taking the prescribed offering of your cleansing, and he will testify to the cure." Those about said among themselves, "He heals unlike other holy men, for those he cures seem to be filled with a strange form of vigor." As Jesus went back into the gathering, a centurion came up to him and said, "I have heard of your powers from many people, and my son is at home and in great pain. Will you kindly heal him? And for this I will be forever grateful." Jesus said, "I will come and heal him." But the centurion replied, "My house is a very humble place and hardly fit for you to enter. Just command it and I know the boy will be cured, for I trust you. I who give and take orders know the power of command." Jesus was surprised to hear these words and, turning to those who followed him, said, "Nowhere in the land have I seen faith such as this. Believe me, many will come from east and west, thinking to sit among our forefathers in the kingdom of the Spirit, but many who are heirs to this kingdom, having forfeited their heritage, will be found outside the gates, and there will be weeping and wailing." Then Jesus said to the centurion, "Go home, my friend. Because of your trust, I will not disappoint you. Then Jesus gave the centurion a piece of metal, saying, Place this beside the boy. And from that time, the boy began to recover. In the crowd which pressed around Jesus was a woman who had suffered from bleeding for 12 years, whom no one had been able to cure. Coming up behind Jesus, she prayed silently to herself and touched him on the back. At once, the woman began to feel comfortable and relieved. But Jesus knew the healing power had been drawn from him in an unexpected outsurge. Turning to the disciples in the crowd, who stood guard, he asked who had touched him. Peter, who was there, said, How can we know? The crowd presses so close we can hardly control them. The woman, hearing this, and fearful for what she had done, came forward and fell on her knees before Jesus, confessing her guilt. He raised her up gently, saying, My daughter, it is not the power in me alone, but your faith has opened a door whereby it poured out to effect a cure. Be at peace in your heart, for the complaint will trouble you no more. After this, Jesus needed a rest, and while doing so a servant came bearing a message to the man whose daughter had been ill, telling him she had died. Jesus, overhearing what was said, called the man to him and said, Do not upset yourself, just trust me and wait a while, and we will go together. Jesus then bid the crowd remain where it was and went with the father and his servant, accompanied by three disciples. When they arrived at the man's house, mourners had already started the wailing of the laments, and Jesus rebuked them for making such a noise when the girl was only sleeping, for he had sent his spirit before him. The mourners said, What kind of a fool is this? Ordering them outside, Jesus, accompanied by the parents and two disciples, entered the room where the child was lying. Taking her hands, Jesus said, Wake up, my little one. And after a while she gave a great breath. Later, opening her eyes, she smiled and soon got up. The parents were overcome, but when they recovered, Jesus told them to keep their own counsel and attend to the child. When they had left, James, one of the disciples, asked, Why are some brought back to life and others not? Jesus answered, Did I not say this one only slept? There is a time appointed for dying, and the spirits of men keep their appointments. I work with the law of life, not against it. When they arrived back at the place where the crowd was gathered, there was a man lying in their midst, with a greatly swollen leg which had crippled him for many years. He said to Jesus, Sire, I have been a sinful man and have been punished. Jesus said, Be of good heart, for your suffering has compensated for your misdeeds. Some nearby who were hostile towards Jesus, hearing this, said, This is blasphemous talk. Overhearing what was said, Jesus turned to them and replied, Talk such as this is cheap and serves no end. It takes more than a wagging tongue to effect cures. Then Jesus said to the man on the ground, Arise and go your way. Thereupon he got up and walked, the people being amazed and giving thanks that such powers could be manifested among them. Jesus then left and returned to the house of Peter and, when he arrived, found several Perushim waiting outside. They said, We hear you have much wisdom. What is the basis of your teaching? What sign can you give of your authority, or what proof, so we can believe? Moses provided heavenly bread when our people starved in the wilderness, and by his deeds we know him for a true prophet. A disciple said, He has just healed four people. But the Perushim replied, There are others who heal. This power is not unique in him. Then Jesus said, Must you have proof and be given signs to believe? Surely this would take all merit from belief. As for Moses, I assure you he did not provide bread from heaven when he fed those who starved in the wilderness. Through me, God will send down the bread of heaven, which nourishes the world. Therefore, when working to support yourselves, do not overlook the need for the bread of heaven which nourishes the spirit, for man cannot live by mortal bread alone. Strive less for perishable food and more for the food of eternal life. The crowd answered, O Sire, never fail to provide us with this bread. Jesus said, I bring the bread of life, whoever partakes of it will never hunger. I bring the water of eternity, and whoever drinks of it will never thirst. All I am intended to receive from above I will share with everyone who comes to me. The power I have comes from heaven and is used not for my own ends, but to serve the purpose of He who gave it. His will is that I should waste no particle of what I have been given, but must account for it when my work is ended. For it is the will of He who invested me with authority and power that whoever has faith in me and believes in my cause, putting my teachings into practice, will enjoy immortality in glory. One of the Purushim said to Jesus, "Why do so many flock to hear you speak instead of going to the temples and places of assembly? Why do they have to listen to someone speaking on the streets and hillsides when they could listen to those fully armed with knowledge of the law?" Jesus answered, "I too am surprised so many seek to learn righteousness from me. Maybe they come because I am among those disinherited. But before telling them what to do, put yourselves in their place. Can it be they find my teachings more sustaining and closer to their hearts?" Many of the Jews were angry at the teachings of Jesus, for he said, "I have the true bread of life and of heaven." They said, "Is this not the Jesus we know, son of Joseph and Mary, who are just ordinary people?" Jesus once said to them, "Do not say things behind my back when you can say them to my face. I will draw no one away from your own teachings unless something greater inclines them towards me. But if it does, they are on the way to immortality. The prophets promised your forefathers that their descendants would receive instructions from God. So can you not believe these things? Therefore, anyone God inclines towards me hears me speak with his voice." The people who joined the crowds about Jesus filled him with compassion, for they were so anxious to find the deliverer. They seemed pathetically helpless and lost, like sheep without a shepherd. Jesus said to his disciples, "The seed planted was good, and there is a rich harvest ready for the cutting. But alas, the harvesters are few, therefore the overseer must be requested to send more men." The following day, Jesus was seated among the trees near the house of Peter, and with him were many disciples. And one said to him, "Sire, since the days of our fathers, many slaves have come into the land, great numbers having no slaves, being forced into brigandage, for otherwise they would starve. Are these men evildoers?" Jesus replied, "What they do is not good and therefore must be evil. But though their wrongdoing may be great in the eyes of men, it is small in the eyes of God compared with the evil done by those who stand behind the deed. Many, blameless in the eyes of men, will not escape the judgment of eternity. The disinherited say, 'All things will change when God wills it,' but I tell you the Father will not do the work of his sons. The deliverer comes to take men to their places of labor and will ease their burdens there, but he cannot undertake the whole of the task. He will initiate the rule of God, but cannot force it upon men. He will teach them to judge the underprivileged justly and to deal harshly with the arrogant. The rich will be less rich and the poor less poor. He will point the feet of men towards the path of perfection, but cannot carry them along it. Earthly kings can drive men to fulfill their tasks, but no one can be driven along the path to glory. Only those who guide and lead can take men this way. I bring the light, and the light is a good tree bearing beneficial fruit. But fruit on the tree of darkness is consistent with conditions about its roots. For all trees are rooted in darkness, but the good tree transmutes the things of darkness into things of light." A disciple said to Jesus, "Sire, you say harsh things about the rulers and those in high places, but do not seek to arm us against them. Surely the day of arming comes soon." Jesus answered, "A physician is called to treat the sickness, and a healthy man does not require his attentions. The good in men I strengthen but leave untouched, it is the evil I seek out to destroy. Were it not for the strength of those who govern, there would be no peace in the land. Man would strive with man, and there would be murder and pillage everywhere. It would be like the sea, where big fish feed on the small, and nothing is there to prevent it. Therefore, if murder and robbery are kept from your door, pay due homage to those who stand guard. If an evil king be guarded by 1,000 good men, should these be slain to kill the king? Is it not best to first take the good men away from service with the king, bringing them into your own ranks? Those who serve evil, though powerful and wily, are cowards and hide behind the arms of better men. Therefore, by killing the brave men are you not adding evil to evil? No, first bring the good and brave men to your side, and then let events happen as they will. A young disciple who became an envoy said, "You speak about bread unlike other bread, but the meaning is not clear to me. Tell me again about it." Jesus said, "I will tell you with certainty, he who follows my cause wholeheartedly will gain eternal life, for I have the bread of immortality. The bread I give forms part of my being, and I share it for the good of the world. Many have the grains, but these are yet to be ground and baked. Unless, therefore, you can partake of my substance and become like me, you cannot gain immortality in glory. Yet what I can do, you can do also, what I have become, you can become. I do not ask men to follow a path I would not travel myself. Neither is there anything in me not inherent in you. As I am the true food of men, and the power of life flowing in me is their true drink. I come with special gifts and authority from above, clothed with the living spirit, and I express life as I do because of the powers within me. So it will be with those who partake of my bread." Many of those with Jesus could not hold these things in their hearts, for they were not easily understood. But one recorded them. Some, hearing these teachings, said, "These words are not easy to understand and difficult to accept." Jesus said, "So you find difficulty in accepting what I say? Suppose you could see me communicating with my place of origin, would you believe then? But the eyes of the flesh cannot see things intended only for the eyes of the Spirit. Only the Spirit contains the power of life, and the flesh of itself can see or do nothing. The words I have spoken concern only the life-holding Spirit, and I have not referred to worldly matters. But still you do not understand. I know you are perplexed and confused by my teachings. That is why I said something greater must speak internally to incline you toward me." From this day, many disciples and followers no longer heeded him. It is written in the holy books of the Jews, "In the days of unrighteousness, I will send forth a firebrand to consume the world with fire. Also, then each man shall know the fullness of his own nature, and his reward shall be according to his measure." Chapter 13. Jesus went from there to the house of his mother, for Mary had a small inheritance. She was a careful woman, for once, when her children were young, having lost a small silver coin, she swept the floor carefully, sifting until she found it. Leaving there, he withdrew to the sea, for Jesus liked to swim and be among the boats. Now while he was there, a great number came from Galilee, from all of Judah and from Jerusalem, some even from beyond Jordan and from the coast of the western sea where he was known. Jesus bid his followers prepare a small ship as quickly as possible to take him away from the great crowd pressing about him. As he had cured so many who were afflicted, those still uncured tried to touch him, and there was a constant shoving and scuffling to get nearer. Escaping the boat, he went with it a short distance to where a path led up a hillside. Climbing this to a small mount, he sat down with his disciples. The time for celebrating the great festival was approaching, and Jesus had sent out many envoys and heralds. Seeing that a large crowd had gathered on the hillside, Jesus stood up and addressed the people, after they were seated, "In this manner, this is a night of ignorance when men wander, lost in the darkness of worldly conditions. I am the light and hope of men. These are the people I support and accept, and this is the message I give to them. For I have come to unsheathe the sword of the Spirit among men and to lead them forth to fight the battles of God. The sword is the Spirit, even as the body is the scabbard. Let your swords be bright and keen for the fray. Be stalwart and resolute, and the rule of God will surely sweep all wickedness and evil, all pain and distress from the face of the earth. I accept the oppressed and dispirited, for they shall inherit glory in the kingdom of the Spirit. I accept those who grieve, for they should not be without a comforter. Is it not written, 'Let the words of God be an unquenchable light within you, and they will shorten your days of sorrow? I accept the disinherited, for they shall inherit the earth. Is it not written, the disinherited shall be joyful amid bounty and peace? I accept those who hunger after enlightenment, for they shall be satisfied. Is it not written, the pleasures of the food table sit heavily on the stomach, but wisdom fills the heart with satisfaction and content? I accept the compassionate, for they shall be compensated. Is it not written, he who has compassion builds a fountain of consolation for his time of need? I accept the pure-hearted, for their nature draws them closer to God. Is it not written, he whose hands and heart are clean receives the fullest measure of spirit power? I accept the peacemakers, for they are truly the heirs of God. Is it not written, listen, my children, and I will teach you the ways that are good, causing you to seek for peace and maintain it? I accept those who suffer in the cause of mankind, for on them shall fall the mantle of glory in the kingdom of the Spirit. Is it not written, when they scorned and abused me, I was strengthened by the Spirit of God, and nothing can now dismay me? I accept those whose motives, when seeking to do good, are misunderstood, for their place in glory is established. Is it not written, because they have reviled and slandered you, eternal glory will be granted? You whom I accept are the salt of the earth, but if the savor of the salt disappears, it is useless. As salt without any flavor would be good for nothing, so those without goodness in their hearts serve no purpose. As salt adds flavor to food, so do good men make life more acceptable. I am your light, but you are the light of the world. Therefore, build a strong city set on a hill, for a light shining from a hilltop cannot be hidden. I have given you the light so it may be put to use, for men do not put a lighted candle under a grain basket but in a candlestick where it can light up the room. Let your lights shine before men, so they see the path clearly. Join your lights together, so they combine to form an unquenchable flame. For while a candle is easily snuffed out, it takes many men to subdue a forest fire. Be stout-hearted and resolute, for the struggle will be grim. The foe is wily and well entrenched behind thick walls. Those who have lived with poverty and misery, maintaining a cheerful heart in tribulation, will arise to glory. Those who are broken serving the cause of God will receive a mantle of splendor. Those whose proper desires remain unfulfilled on earth will find fulfillment in heaven. Those who have cheerfully borne affliction or deformity will radiate strength. And those who die for the cause of justice and peace will inherit life in glory. I reject those who oppose the rule of God. I herald a reborn world, even as I was heralded, but while such as these encumber the earth, it will not be reborn. I assure you of this, unless the world be reborn, it cannot know the rule of God. The upheaval of the labor pains will be great. For though many will say, speed the day with their lips, in their hearts they will be saying, the cost is too great, spare the coming. By their fruits shall they be known, and by their deeds shall they be judged. I reject the rich who live with their riches, or those who live beyond the bounds of moderation, for they shall be humbled in outer darkness. Is it not written, those in houses of comfort, where they sit at ease listening to instruments of music and sleep on soft beds of ivory, shall not survive? I reject those who gorge themselves with refinements of food while others hunger, for they shall hunger in the kingdom of the Spirit. Is it not written, they who serve God will be filled, but those who do not will want? I reject those who scorn the way of wisdom, seeking vain pleasures which dull the spirit, for they shall be sorrowful in their proper place. Is it not written, the spirits of those who serve God shall be joyful, but the spirits of those who reject Him shall weep in sorrow and regret? I reject the arrogant and selfish and those mainly concerned with themselves, for they will be friendless in their place. Is it not written, the things built of selfishness and false pride will be broken? I reject the liars and deceivers, for their abode is a place of darkness. Is it not written, the deceitful shall not know the presence of God? I reject those who encourage ignorance, walking stiff-necked, their hearts an unopened book, for they shall not be enlightened. Is it not written, Those who shower scorn on the words of others and close their eyes to righteousness shall not receive a righteous reward in their place. I reject the fornicators and adulterers and those who seek after lewd pleasures, for they shall go to a place of uncleanness. Is it not written, only they who are clean can come into the presence of God? I reject those who in any way cause needless suffering, for they shall go to a place of pain. Is it not written, he who causes distress, though it be done in secret, yet he is seen and will repay? I reject the hypocrites and self-deceivers, for their loathsomeness will be properly purged. Is it not written, words not written in the heart should never issue from the mouth? Woe to all who hear my words but twist their meaning to suit their convenience. If a man says he is with me but does not abide by my teachings, then he is a hypocrite. If he says, but I live in circumstances where this does not apply, he is a liar. Far better that such as these say, we are against you, for until they do, the world will not be reborn. I bring light to the thrashing floor of life, where suffering and misfortune are the flails, tribulation and distress the winnowing fan and the wisdom of God the winnowing shovel. Here the wheat is separated from the husks, the chaff is thrown out, and the good grains gathered up. I come to build a new temple, and if you say, these are good teachings, and take them to your heart but tomorrow revile your neighbor and deceive your kinfolk, you are an unstable brick. If the temple be built with such material, surely it will collapse, and those within will perish. Is it not better if it were never built? If you say, but I am weak, then examine your defects and take the first step to stability, but examination is a waste of time unless leading to rectification. I call you to serve no mean cause, but to stand beside me and claim your inheritance. Those who dispute the claim are the ones I reject, and you must set your faces against them, even as I do. Come and inherit the incorruptible glory which is in heaven, even as flesh is on earth. The way is narrow and difficult, for no one who has not been tempted and tried can attain his reward. He that is near me is close to a blazing fire and may get burned, but he who withdraws from the heat withdraws from heaven. Some have said, the yoke of the law sits heavy on our shoulders, but I tell you, I come not to lighten but to increase the burden. Moses brought the law which says not to kill, but I say, any who releases anger on his brother without just cause shall not escape judgment. The law you have condemns adultery, but I tell you that if any man looks upon a woman with fornication in mind, he is no less guilty. For it is what a man thinks that will lead him to glory or decay. He who is pure in love does not defile his heart by looking at another woman with fornication in view. The law you have says, no man shall put his wife aside unless he give her a bill of divorcement, but I tell you that whosoever seeks to put his wife aside, except for adultery or she is found unchanged est, places her on the path of adultery and is therefore not guiltless. What God has blended in spirit let no man seek to sever, but those joined in body and not in spirit are not sanctified. The law you have says, you shall not swear falsely or break an oath, though if you vow something to the service of God, the pledge must be kept. I tell you never to swear any oath, but confine yourself to a straightforward yes or no. It is needless to say more, for the word of a godly man is more binding than the most solemn oath sworn by another. If you are not a godly man, then doubtless your word and oath would be worthless anyway. If your eye give cause for complaint, leading you towards lewdness or obscenity, pluck it out. It is of greater advantage to suffer disfigurement on earth than to be cast into the depths to suffer it there. If your right hand give cause for complaint, cut it off, for if your body be maimed on earth, you bear it a little time, but surely do nothing to prevent it remaining intact in the place of glory. The law you have says, love your neighbors and hate your enemies, but I tell you to love your enemies, do good to those who hate you, and pray for those who deceive or persecute you. For if you only give love for love, this cannot be claimed as a meritorious thing, when even criminals return the love of those who love them. If you only repay good with good, dealing fairly only with those who treat you likewise, how can merit be claimed for this, which is no more than criminals do? It is the same if you give only to those who give to you, for criminals give to their own kind. Can you stand by and let it be said that criminals treat each other better than do godly men? Love your enemies, but not their faults. Love those who hate you, but concede nothing to their wickedness. Give without expectation of return, then only can you lay claim to goodness and be called a servant of God. I have not come to abolish the law or to change the teachings of the prophets, but to complete them, adding any necessary clarification and interpreting them to the understanding of men. But the time has come to ask, when will they be put into practice? When will men bring God out of the temple and make him a participant in their daily lives? When will men carry these things in their hearts and stop paying them lip service? I say with certainty, so long as earth and the heavens above it remain, not even the smallest particle shall be deducted from the law until the purpose it serves has been completed. Therefore, if anyone try to avoid even the least obligation imposed by the law, or to set aside the slightest of its restrictions, or teach others to do the same, he will be an insignificant thing in the life to come. But whoever lives by them, leading others to do likewise, will achieve the greatest heights of glory. Do all charitable acts privately, not displaying your righteousness to catch the eyes of others, for by so doing you void their benefits. Only those seeking public acclaim and hypocrites do these things ostentatiously. Never seek publicity for your deeds or goodness, nor let it be forced on you. I assure you that those who do these things have their reward on earth, and nothing awaits them elsewhere. When setting out on an errand of goodness, keep your right hand in ignorance of the left hand's deeds. Do your good deeds in secret, knowing they are not overlooked and will be duly rewarded, but do them without thought of reward, or they will lose their merit. Do not be like the hypocrites who pray in the sight of everyone, they are being rewarded now. Pray in solitude, for your Father can be contacted from anywhere and is everywhere. Never use needless repetition or ramble on in the mistaken belief that the more you say, the more likely you are to be heard. Do not be a mere babbler of words, for prayer is not formed by words alone. Remember, your every need is known, so whatever is withheld may be for your own good. Prayer is contact between spirit and spirit, and should seek only to reinforce the strength of the spirit. This is a pattern for prayer: Our Father in spirit, may your nature become known among men and your rule established on earth, according to the heavenly plan. May your design be completed. Give us the sustenance we need, and overlook our transgressions as we overlook the transgressions of others. Do not test us too severely, and strengthen us against the servants of evil. If you overlook the failings of others and forgive people for the wrongs they have done to you, then the burden of your own will be alleviated. Also, when you fast or undertake an obligation, do not be like the hypocrites who lengthen their faces, going about it self-righteously, bringing themselves to the attention of others. Hoard no earthly treasures which can be destroyed by moths and decay, or may be stolen by thieves. It is far better to establish a storehouse in the spirit land, for there you can accumulate treasures beyond reach of these things. A man's heart is never far from the place where he establishes his credit. Providing you view everything optimistically, maintaining a cheerful and confident outlook, you will radiate assurance. If you do not, you will shed despondency and gloom wherever you go. No man has ever succeeded in serving two masters, for his loyalties must lie with one or the other. Neither can a man have two prime objectives; he must aim for an earthly goal or a spiritual one. I advise you not to worry unduly about the future needs of the body, how it will be nourished and clothed. There is more to life than eating and comfort, while overdone pleasure soon palls. Keep this one fact constantly in mind: the soul is of more importance than the body. Think about the birds of the air; they neither sow nor reap or gather in a harvest, yet provision has been made for their needs. Do you think any less consideration has been given to your welfare? Trust in the powers above, and when things go wrong, try to understand the reason. When you are being tried by tribulation, try and see the objective of the test. Is there anyone among you who, by though alone, can add an arm's length to his height? Worry is a useless activity of the mind, so why worry about food and clothing? Look how the wild flowers grow in the meadows; they do not toil or spin, Yet Solomon in full regalia was not attired so attractively as one of these. If such beauty is bestowed on wild flowers, which can display it for only a few days before being consumed, shall God not give much more attention to you, his children? Or have you no faith in anything? Therefore, worry less about material things, and concentrate more on the spiritual, making the cause of God your main concern. Do this, and all other things will come within your reach. Do not worry about tomorrow, for it will look after itself. Each day will bring you sufficient problems without the need to worry about those of other days. There is no reason why hypocrisy, the disease of the day, should come so naturally to men. But which of you is not contaminated by it? How many of you are self-deceivers, making excuses for these things? How is it you can readily detect the small faults in others while being absolutely blind to your own much greater ones? How can you say to another, "Let me help you see more clearly," when you are practically blind yourself? You, hypocrites and self-deceivers, first examine your own faults and failings before criticizing those of others. Never be afraid to voice your needs, and if you have a friend, turn to him whenever you require help, for this is the nature of friendship. Ask, and you will receive; seek, and you will find; knock, and the door will be opened. These things are the law of life, for at the end it will be said to you, "As you sought, so have you found, and according to the manner of asking have you received." It is not what you seek, but how you seek; not what you request, but the manner of requesting. Is there any man among you who, if his son ask for bread, will give him a stone, or a snake if he ask for a fish? If, then, you, with all your mortal faults and ignorance, know how to give the right things to your children, how much more able is God to give what is right for his? The things you surely do not need are comfort and content, while assurance and security open the gates to spiritual apathy. Enter by the narrow, unpretentious gate, for the road leading to the dark abyss has a wide road and attractive entrance, while the gate leading to immortality is austere, and the road fraught with difficulties. Beware of false prophets and those who would mislead you, for many seeking to promote their own ends walk the ways of righteousness, clothed in sheepskins, but are hypocrites, being ravening wolves within. Those who indicate an easy path are false guides. And those who say another can absolve them from the effects of their misdeeds expound an error. You will know them by the effects of their teachings, just as a good tree is recognized through the fruit it bears. Can the wild thorn produce grapes, or are figs found growing on thistles? If a tree fail to produce good fruit, it is cut down and burned, for it can serve no better purpose. Therefore I say, judge men by the fruits of their labors. Some hail me as their leader, thinking this will help them in the life to come, but it will not. Only those who wholeheartedly serve the cause and purpose of God will enjoy this in full glory. Many who do things in my name will expect me to intercede for them, but to these I will say, "I did not know you, or authorize the statements you made; by your deeds shall you be judged." This does not apply to those who, hearing my words, put them into practice, for they are like the sensible man who built his house on a foundation of rock. The rain poured down and the floods rose, the wind howled above and beat against the house. But it did not collapse because it was set firmly. But there will be many who, hearing these words of mine, will ignore them. And these may be likened to a foolish man who built his house on sand. The rain poured down, the floods rose, the wind howled and beat against the walls, and the whole house collapsed. I herald the coming of the rule of God and a reborn world. I accept those who follow my way, and I will lead them into their kingdom. I reject all those who are against my way. I call upon men of good will to follow us, men who wholeheartedly desire the light and oppose the way of darkness. But the road may be long and beset by many foes. Yet have no fear of those who come with swords and fiery words; their danger is apparent. Those who will be our undoing are the hypocrites and self-deceivers who pay lip service only and manipulate the words of the law to accord with their convenience. I tell you this, many will come, but few will be selected. Moses viewed the promised land only from Pisgah. Let this not be your fate. Face the difficulties ahead, overcome the evildoers who maintain the rule of evil, and claim your reward. The sword is drawn, but the battle has yet to be won. In the reborn world, the wolf shall lay down with the lamb, and the lion with the kid, and a little child shall play with them. Surely, because of their goodness and goodwill, even the wild beasts will submit themselves to the will of those who participate in the rule of God. When Jesus finished speaking, the great assembly of people was silent. For, unlike other teachers, he appeared inspired by divine authority. But within moments they were excitedly discussing the words among themselves. Then a disciple who stood beside Jesus shouted, "All who serve God, praise him. For he has sent a true enlightener and a deliverer, and will himself reign over us through the Spirit which fills his Son. Heed these things, follow the way of Jesus, take up the cross of life and the rule of God is at hand." There were many among the crowd who said, "Surely this is God's anointed for whom we have long awaited. Now we will be delivered according to the promises of the prophets." Hearing the things said by the people among themselves, Jesus was saddened and said to Bartholomew, who stood near him, "Tomorrow they will revert to their old way of life and permit evil to reign through hypocrites and self-deceivers. How can they be brought to understand that should God intervene to bring about the rule of God, earth and mankind will have failed him and be unworthy of his rule? Life's purpose is to produce shepherds, not sheep. But the lives of the people are turned inwards upon themselves." It was now late in the day, but many people still lingered. And a disciple said to Jesus, "Sire, the crowd was very large, and many did not hear all your words. Could you not speak to these? For, though hungry, they would rather listen to you." Jesus said, "My throat aches, but I have bread more satisfying than that which fills the stomach, and meat more satisfying than worldly meat. My supply is inexhaustible. I have multiplied this through you, so now you go among the people and provide what they need."